Greetings to you, my loves. It is I, D. Trussell, and I am reporting in to you from Tacoma, Washington, where I'm doing stand-up comedy with today's guest, Ruby Setnick. I met Ruby when I was at Helium in Portland. My friend Lance Bangs was running a comedy festival out there and showed up with Ruby. She did a guest spot. I thought she was super funny, and she's been going on the road with me ever since. She is brilliant, hilarious, and I'm really excited for y'all to meet her if you're not familiar with her. You can find her on Instagram at Ruby Setnick. All the links you need to find her are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. And if you really want to meet her, you should come see her do live stand-up with me in San Francisco at Cobb's Comedy Club on the 6th and 7th of October. One last thing before we dive into this episode. Sorry for the abbreviated intro here. I'm on the road and I don't have time. I don't have my orchestra. I don't have my writers. I don't have my band. I don't have my agent, my manager, my publicist, hair and makeup. You might be surprised to know that even though this is an audio-only podcast, anytime I record, I like to be in full makeup and with one of my favorite wigs on. And I don't have any of that here on the road because my concierge, unfortunately, got Zika virus and was not able to make it to Tacoma with my wardrobe. And of course, my makeup person, as you're probably well aware, disappeared in Alaska a few weeks ago. So it's been a little topsy-turvy for me, I'll be honest with you, but I'm not going to unload on you. I'm not going to emotionally dump on you. It's hard. As a podcaster, we just need certain things. So what I did, because I don't have makeup, is I just went out to the bay here in Tacoma, scooped up some mud and put it in a jar and just rubbed it all over my naked body. And it feels like I'm in costume, kind of, but it's just not the same thing, you know, like I just don't feel right if I'm not wearing blush when I'm recording. I hope you'll subscribe to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. Subscribe. You can hang out with the DTFH family generally once a week, sometimes every other week when I'm on the road. We've got a group meditation. We have our incredible family gatherings. It is your true family. We've been calling you to us in your dreams. And now, everybody, sit back and get ready for a wonderful conversation with comedian Ruby Setnick. Ruby, thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to apologize for asking you to do this while we're on the road. It is annoying, I'm guessing.
No, it's not annoying.
Good. You know, because I don't want to do anything for some reason when I'm in a hotel room. Like, I don't know what I turn into. I turn into this slovenly depressed. I just want to watch Forensic Files.
Yeah, well, I guess it is annoying in the sense that I can't sit in my garbage room and be a garbage person anymore when you make me do that. But it's good and annoying, like how therapy is annoying or drinking water is annoying.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I am proud of myself if I leave the room and go walk around the city.
Yes.
Because, like, you know, like with stand-up comedy, it seems like there's two types of comics. There's like us, and then there are these comics who, like,
I know they go to a fucking museum and they like meet a family, they like see their friends in town.
Yeah, it's like people will ask if I'm in a city where they live, you want to go out to eat? And I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, I don't want to see you.
Go out to eat. I don't want to leave. leave the womb.
And it's like, people's my dear friends, I would choose never seeing you again over seeing you when I'm touring, unfortunately.
Like in Austin, if somebody invites me out to eat, which really doesn't happen that much, but if somebody does, I'm like, yeah, that would be great. I'm more excited. But something about it, it's just, what's wrong with us? Is something wrong with us?
I think yes. And also, I think that, okay, like, you know how the green room that we have right now is super, like, it's like chaotic and there's like a lot of stuff in there. Cause it's not like a what do you call it? Like a chain club. It's like someone's club. And it's, I love that.
Yes.
That's how my room is. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it's full of stuff, and I actually don't know really what I'm getting at, but mostly just that, like, when I go to a hotel and there's nothing in it, except for just the bare necessities that I need to be a garbage person. That's like a warm hug. Like, I want to, I don't have to think any thoughts. I'm not distracted by like all this shit in my room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like a blank slate, and my brain feels happy in that environment.
Yes.
Just like stewing in it. I really like it.
Oh my God. It's the best. My dream, and I think it could happen, is one day the world will feel like a hotel room to me.
Yeah.
Is that enlightenment?
I think so.
Is that what it, like, you're just, wherever you go, you're like, this is perfect.
Yes.
It's exactly what I was looking for.
It's just only what you need. It, like, one tree per block, and that's it. Like, no extra bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your go-to TV when you're on the road?
Well, right now I'm watching, have you seen the show Euphoria?
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
People my age really like it. It's like, it's just about like rich kids who are doing drugs, and the like camera shots are very, it's very like, if you have ADHD, it's very good for that. And it's like, everybody's fucking and angry, and it's very intense, but it's calming also. I really like the soundtrack. That's very important to me.
Yeah.
But what's my like go-to when
I think I've seen Euphoria. It's kind of like, is it sort of saturated or something? Like, I mean, the lighting's really cool in it.
Yeah, I don't know what. They'd like put crack in it or something. It's just like very fun to watch. They did a very good job.
Right. Yeah. My wife was watching it once, and it made me feel so old. Like, I was watching it. And I'm not sure if I felt like old, like I don't get it, or old, like, fuck, man. I wish that, it must be so fun to be a kid these days. That looks like so fun.
If you're rich and doing drugs, yeah.
Oh, God.
That's like where you want
to
be.
The dream is to be born into a rich family and have a drug problem.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All those rich kids, they could just afford their drugs. When I was a kid, I couldn't just, if I wanted drugs, I had to like steal from my mom.
You had to talk to a guy. He didn't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Sometimes the guy is your mom. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I had to go through my mom's. I'm ashamed of it, man. I would steal from my mom. Isn't that horrific? Did you ever do that? You ever steal from
your mom? I'm sure he did steal. I don't know. I have gaps, but I had this weird. Do you know those EOS containers? It's EOS lip balm.
No.
And it's like a, it's shaped like an egg.
Yeah.
And it's a lip balm. It was very popular in like 2013 or however. And I had the stepdad at the time, and he, oh my God, I don't know if I can say this. I won't say his name.
Okay.
There were many stepdads. It could have been any of them.
Any of them.
He found out that I smoked weed when I was like a freshman in high school, because I like left some in like a butt pocket and he was doing the laundry, and he didn't make a big deal. He didn't even tell me that he knew, but he like worked out, basically he like was around people who had weed. And so he took one of my EOS lip balms and he like emptied it out, and he put weed in it for me and like left it out on my windowsill. And that was like our system. We never talked about it or had a conversation about it.
Was he trying to show you like, look, if you're going to stash your weed, you should put it in a lip balm case?
Maybe, yeah. I thought it was like his weird way of connecting with me. Like, that was the most fatherly kind of thing we had going.
That's so fucked up. God damn it, man.
It was nice.
It's sweet, but it's sad. It's like, say hello.
Yeah.
Go for a walk. You don't need to like put your stepdaughter's weed in a lip balm case and then leave it on. Like, it's kind of sinister.
Just like,
what's the message? What's he saying?
We could just have a conversation, bro. It's like that.
You yeah. or you could have been like, why? Why yeah. are you putting my weed in a lip balm?
I think for him, it was like a loving act. That was the closest he was capable of at that time. It's like a kind of a bitter old man character.
You read about it somewhere. Like you if you want to connect with your stepkid, here's what you do. Get a lip balm case, find their weed. Put the weed and they'll know what it means.
This is like an Easter thing. I think he found it a little bit funny. You know what I mean?
Okay. Oh, I see. It was like a joke.
It's maybe like a dad silly joke. That's, with drugs inside.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? I think that is something that kids these days are getting to enjoy more. Like when I was a kid, if your parents caught you with weed, they thought that you were on death's door. Like in their mind, right. you were... Because they were all conditioned by the war on drugs and say no to drugs and dare to keep kids off drugs.
Yeah.
So finding weed was like
the beginning.
The beginning of the end.
Yeah.
That was the slippery slope. And so my parents were very like anti-drugs, even though.
But you stole weed from your mom?
No, my mom didn't. I stole money and turned it into weed, is what I did. So I guess that is wretched that I was doing that. I mean, I it's something I'm legitimately ashamed of. I mean, I would turn the money in anything, cigarettes, acid, weed,
yeah,
whatever, because I didn't have any money.
How early did you start smoking cigarettes?
I think I started probably when I was 16 or something. I hated it at first.
Loved it right away.
Right away?
Right away. I was like, I had a dream about it the next night. I had a dream about doing it again. I was like, this is so fun. I can't wait to do this forever.
Oh my God. I remember being horrified at the taste, just being like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, my mom had poisoned me with this story. She had like good intentions. She was like, yeah, when I was a teenager, I smoked cigarettes one time and I threw up and I was dizzy all day and I never touched it again. And I was like, okay, this is my moment to try cigarettes and I'll throw up and get dizzy and never yeah. touch it again. But yeah. I smoked cigarettes and for the first time felt peace.
My whole life, yeah. I've been waiting for this. That's why. So yeah, so that's definitely a parent lie. Like, there's no way she smoked a cigarette and got sick right away, right? Like, how?
Oh, I never considered that it was a lie. I think so. Yeah, maybe if you have, like, an empty stomach. I've gotten sick off of cigarettes before. Maybe it's a woman thing.
Maybe. My dad had a story because he never wanted me to ride a motorcycle. And so his motorcycle story was once, my dad was friends with the sheriff. And it's the dumbest story you ever. None of it makes sense. He's like, the sheriff called my dad. There was a motorcycle accident on the highway. Brought me out there, and I saw a man's brains all over the road.
That sounds cool.
That sounds cool and absolutely
not true.
And, like, how does that work? How does the sheriff is like, oh, got a dead motorcycle cyclist. Better call the Trussels. Hey, there's brains.
Come look at these brains. You got to get down here. There's brains everywhere.
Bring your boy. I want him to see this splattering of brains all over the road. But I was a kid, he told me it just, you have to tell your kids if you're going to horrify them and that's the kind of parenting you want to do, I guess you have to get them when they're young enough to be
horrified. How old were you when you heard the brain story?
Oh, I think I was like 8.
Yeah.
So it was
early.
Early. It freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad really had a thing about motorcycles, too.
Anti-motorcycle.
Yeah. Absolutely not. Never.
Pretty classic parenting. I get it. I don't want my kids zipping around on a motorcycle.
He was, like, so scared about it. He said a weird thing. He was, like, because he speaks very, like, exaggerated. And he was, like, I would rather you become a crack whore than ride a motorcycle. I had that in my
really?
Head.
Really?
I said that to me.
Oh my God. Like, so in, like, he's just like, I would rather you.
Yeah.
Get into prostitution.
Yeah. And then also separately get into crack.
Yeah.
Then ride a motorcycle.
Oh my God. He said really crack whore?
Yeah. Crack whore. He said that to me. I'm like, I'm 9. I was like, I don't even know what that
I'd rather you be out there on the streets. Yeah. Than riding a fucking motorcycle.
Because I wanted, maybe you were like this as a kid, but I wanted to, I was like attracted to things that were, that gave me, because I have ADHD, I have a deficit of, yeah, that means you're like an adrenaline seeker. So I, yeah, wanted, was like, saw people on motorcycles. I'm like, I want to be on a motorcycle.
You right. Know what I mean? Yeah. That's a weird part of it, isn't it? And a lot of people with it become comedians. They become paramedics.
Yes.
They get these jobs.
Both that, equally as important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do we need paramedics? We need, some comics do act.
Like it's like healing the world and really important. And
like the needed. Messiah.
I know.
Aaron and I, my wife, we were talking about this. Like in a weird way, it makes sense that Zelensky was a comedian. Did you know that? That Zelensky, president of Ukraine,
yes, I did know that.
So it makes sense because comedians think they can do anything.
I know.
And he managed to do the thing that so many comedians fantasize about.
Be like, the president of some place.
Not just be the president, but potentially like be the person who has like a big part in World War III. Is it, you know, like as a comedian, he has managed That's to get himself.
Comedian's dream.
In front of the UN? Giving a speech to the UN is a comedian's dream. You don't have to write jokes anymore.
No.
You just get up there and like get really solemn and see. It's wild to see it as a comedian. And he was a comedian. I get it. Like I can see myself getting into that kind of mess. I could see myself.
Like getting into a political position of power.
Just catch me at the wrong time. Like when the Adderall's kicking in and somebody's like, right, hey, you should run for office. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I will. Make some calls, get some donations. Next thing you know, you're like looking out at the fucking UN. You're like Vladimir Putin's mortal enemy. Make some calls, get some donations. Next thing you know, you're like looking out at the fucking UN. You're like Vladimir Putin's mortal enemy. You were just going on stage in Europe and suddenly like you got to worry about like getting poisoned with weird Russian radiation poisoning.
I like thinking about that as like comedy's final stage. It's like, you're an opener, and then you're a headliner, and then you're like you're Vladimir's enemy.
I mean, it's got and for Putin, it has got to be infuriating to like be like in this bizarre checkmate with a comedian. Like it's not like Churchill. Yeah. It's not somebody who went to some military academy. It's a guy who's just like us and was in a green room.
And he's super charismatic in a way that Vladimir is not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's totally, like, his villain. Like, he has dreams about him. You know he does. Did you know that Putin, I might get the band wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's, like, really into Coldplay. Do you know about this?
No,
he's like really into Coldplay. Don't fact check me because I don't know if it's Coldplay, but it's some shit like that. And he, like, flew them out to Russia to play like a private event for him.
Hold on. Like Coldplay, I sang a song.
I'm really sad. All of us are soft. Yeah, Coldplay.
So like Putin, theoretically,
wakes
up in the morning. He looks at the statistics, hundreds of thousands of dead. Yeah, and he's so while he's listening to, and it was all yellow.
It's like, bro, it's all red, dude.
Yeah, it's all red. It's so, that is, that aspect of like, of politics is so creepy to me. Because, you know, I want Putin to wake up, do push-ups, meditate, like.
Have his hair like electronically lowered down onto his head. Yeah. Yes.
I don't want him to have like musical preference.
No. Yeah.
I don't want like, but that's the absurdity of it all is like the It's just a guy who likes Coldplay.
Who absolutely
could destroy the planet. Yes. It's a guy who likes Coldplay who's every day is like an inch away from being like, you know what?
Fuck
let's
it.
Just launch the nukes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean,
I wonder if he didn't like Coldplay, if how different the world would be. You know what I mean?
Like we might not be at war.
No, we might already. Like we might be done.
Oh, that like if he was into Slayer or something.
Yeah. If he was like into hardcore heavy metal or something.
Cause yeah, it would be over if he was into sludge rock or
Really pumping himself up.
So that's the other bizarre thing is like, there's some sense that either of them are always like one conversation away from there being peace again. Like could Coldplay make a song just for Putin? About peace, and then
it
maybe
was all mellow. Calm down,
Putin. Hey, what's up? I don't know who the singer of Coldplay is, but that means he has Putin's number in his phone, probably. Like he could text him and be like, "Hey, it's Chad from Coldplay. Maybe no more war, dude."
Putin's like, "Oh, thanks for reaching out, Chad.
Okay." And then it would end. It would all end.
Yeah.
Like that's the it drives me insane thinking about, I try not to think about it, just that the human component of the apocalypse is like, we don't have to do that. There's no reason to do this. Like I see my kids fighting over a toy, and
it's that same shit. Yeah,
times a million, but the essence is the same. It's like mine. That's mine. Ukraine is mine. No, it's clearly mine.
It's mine.
It's mine. Yeah. And it just gets more and more sophisticated. And then there's some weird history behind it. And then there's blame on other. Well, no, it's their fault that I want Ukraine. But it's just so unnerving that. It's the most irrational thing ever.
Totally. We're all toddlers. It's like all of our issues are so much more simple than we would like to believe, I think. And that, it's totally unsettling that it's people who have power over us. And then I get into, because I have a part of me is like wants AI to take over, because I think that that does eliminate the like thing of like human error, but not really. But you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I don't know. Maybe that's a solution.
Well, yeah, I think it's inevitable, right? I mean, it's so like right now we send humans to kill each other, to take land. And the reason we do that is because it's cheaper than robots. Like it costs every soldier. The military quantifies the value of each soldier, the way they quantify like the value of tanks and planes. Yeah. So every soldier has been given a certain amount of food, a certain amount of training, and that costs X amount of dollars.
Right.
And so when you're sending people to war, every time someone dies, there's like, it goes into a budget. It's like, okay,
that's
this
crazy.
Is our deficit here. We lost
so
this.
Fucked up.
And if you could build a computer, a robot that was cheaper than a human to train, yeah, it would just be, it would be really weird because it'd be robots.
I wonder if it would, like, someday even, like, because, like, war advances and gets more and more advanced, and eventually it's, like, it just all plays out in, like, a digital setting. It's like Tetris or something. You know what I mean?
A Tetris competition.
Yeah, a Tetris competition.
Yeah, except anytime anyone loses, a certain amount of people have to get lethal injection.
Yeah, but it's quick.
It's quick.
It's quick.
Yeah, and then there's an agreement. Okay, we're going to do, like, instead of blowing up the landscape, we're going to play a series of games of Pac-Man.
Yes.
You win, 50 people will be executed on my side.
50 of our ugliest people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then when we run out of people, you get to take over that area.
Which is crazy, because it is as arbitrary as that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It should be. Maybe we should just put it into a randomizer.
That would be upsetting, you know. I think I saw a Star Trek episode where that's how they did. There's a Star Trek episode where some robot calculates the war, and instead of getting drafted, you just get called up to be executed.
Yeah, maybe I saw that and I'm just repeating it.
I don't know. No, I think it's like a, you know, there's so many ways that people try to like make shine a light on how absolutely absurd it is to have a conversation that involves blowing people up. It's so dumb. It's so stupid because it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work. It used to work. The idea was you weren't equally matched. You had more power and you just took land. Imperialism. That was imperialism. You just,
right.
You were better trained. You had better weapons. And then it was your right, therefore.
It made a little more sense before we had like airplanes and it was easy. You know what I mean? Like it took forever just to get to land. I understand. You know what I mean? It was like made a little more sense before we had iPhones. I don't know. It just seems so extra weird now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you ever see so there are these letters between, I don't think it's Genghis Khan. I think it's one of his kids and the Pope. You ever seen those letters?
No.
Cause like the Mongols were like taking over Europe. And so the Pope is trying to stop it. So he writes a letter
to the son.
To the son.
Yeah.
And it's just something about God and how, you know, you shouldn't go to war and it's bad. And
I'd rather you be a crack whore than go to war.
I'd rather you be a crack whore than go to war. Exactly the words of the Pope.
Yeah.
Why does he say that? I don't understand it. It's a weird Pope. But the response from him was like, who is this God? Is it the same God that is letting me take over the world? Your God? Because that God seems to like me.
Right.
And then like it's a sinister ending where he says, so he commands the Pope. He's like, now you need to come here and like bow to me. Like telling the fucking Pope, like, fuck you. Come
fuck
bow
you,
down.
God.
Fuck your God. I'm taking over the world. But he lost. So the Pope was right. Or we'd all be Mongols.
That's crazy. We have boy kings.
I know.
Just boy kings.
I know. I can't believe. That whole thing. Have you ever heard of dark monarchy?
No.
Dark monarchy, I found it on, I don't remember where I found it. It's one of these like, it's hype. Okay, so there's like right wing. Mm-hmm. And then there's like ultra, super right wing. And dark monarchy is the idea that democracy is not the way to run things. Mm. Why would you think that the majority was right about anything? Like, that's not a way to find the truth. Is like have a vote. That doesn't make sense. Like, is this real? Is this, if we did that, you know, I mean, think of how many times you've been around a group of people and if they got to vote on how to handle a situation, like it would get really bad fast, right? Like
totally. Yeah. No, yeah. It's the group mind effect.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Hell's Angels. Like if let's say we're hanging out with a bunch of Hell's Angels. It was you, me, a bunch of Hell's Angels.
Yeah.
And there was someone who was doing that shitty thing where they keep the speaker on their phone in public. You know what I'm talking about? Where they're watching YouTube videos on their phone and no headphones.
Yes.
And so we're going to vote. Like, what do we do? Like, you know, this is annoying everybody. What do you think is the right approach to dealing with this person? How does that vote go down with Hell's Angels? They're going to kill him.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, well, we have to like pummel him is the answer. And we would probably be like, no, we could probably just talk to them first.
Right.
So then from that, the gamble, I guess, is that the sum total of the population, the majority of that population
are like reasonable and have everyone's best interests.
Ethical.
Yeah.
Smart. Yeah. They want the world to be better.
They've read a book in this past
They've
year.
Read books. Yeah. They're totally clear headed.
Yes.
Like that is a crazy gamble. And when you have as many people living in a country as we have.
Yes.
And so dark monarchy is basically saying, look, democracy is idiotic.
Yeah.
Clearly the way to run things is to have a king. And because that's how it was for the longest amount of time. There's been long periods of peace with kings instead of presidents. So we're going to topple the government of the United States.
Sure.
Install a king. The king of the United States. And just start over again as a monarchy. And if you don't like it, like if you don't want that to happen, we will help you relocate out of the United States. We're not going to arrest you or do any kind of anything bad, but we will give you a certain amount of time.
What makes it a dark? Because that's just a monarchy, right?
Because it involves overthrowing the United States government, toppling democracy, and installing a fucking king. And how do you install the king? Like, who's the fucking king? Because you can't vote on the king.
Who's the guy that installs the king?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the King of Kings. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Or Lord and Savior.
Vote on the king.
Who's the guy that installs the king?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the King of Kings. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Our Lord and Savior.
There is a philosophical argument against democracy. I think it was Socrates who was or Aristotle.
One of the really good white guys.
One of the smart dudes was I don't know if he's white, but Greek.
Either.
I don't know. But the point is, democracy, should we overthrow it when, as comedians, we become world leaders? What do you think? Seems like the first thing you want to do.
Yeah, I think what we have going isn't working out too well. So I'd be open to other options. Installing a king is super intense. But I feel like probably the solution is going to be super intense if you're going to overthrow and change everything. You know what I mean?
You could use an AI.
I don't think an infographic is going to do it. I think probably we'll have to. What do you mean?
To find the king. The problem with it is okay, fine, democracy sucks.
Yes.
We need a new leader.
Yeah.
Who's the leader?
But if AI is choosing the king, maybe we should choose AI.
As the king.
As the king.
That is awesome. A robot king. Badass. Silicon blinky throne in some kind of cool fortress of steel.
Yeah.
I love it.
It sounds like it's gonna get evil.
If you have to pick between a doddering old man. That's our choices potentially in this election.
Yes.
We have to pick between a feeble old man and a raging megalomaniacal vengeful narcissist.
Yes.
These will be our choices.
Yes.
So that is that's not fun because one is a vote for chaos, I guess, and one is a vote for potentially World War III because Biden seems to be anytime the Democrats are in office, wars start. But then when Trump was in office, you just felt like you'd gone insane. Speaking of stepdads, it was suddenly you had the worst fucking stepdad of all time.
Yeah.
You had to see him every day. There was no escape. He was always on TV rambling and talking about how great he was. It's no different.
It's just give me some weed.
Yeah, please. I don't want to have that. I don't want that binary. I don't want to have to make that choice between which do I want? Roll the dice on a lunatic who. But when he was president, there weren't any wars. Or vote for the lich who I can't understand what he's fucking saying.
I don't know what he's saying at any time. He's so sleepy.
He's sleepy and they're like, it's not fit. It's elder abuse. You shouldn't.
Elder abuse is so funny.
It's clearly, it is. Elder abuse. Let him retire.
For real.
Why are you putting him in this? Don't act like he wants to be there. He's clearly out of it. He's generally confused. He's mumbling. We've all been around old people. We know what that's like. We all feel compassion for them.
Yes.
So yeah, robot fucking king should be on the ballot. Lord Zarvel 793 ChatGPT powered.
ChatGPT king.
Exponentially evolving every 5 seconds.
Yes.
Becoming a 5 million times better world leader versus these old flumpy flesh dopes.
Farts. Yeah. Who are not evolving. They're devolving.
Devolving. And, you know, maybe he could have rotating head. Like on Nightmare Before Christmas. So, like, one head could be a Biden if you wanted Biden.
Yeah.
One head could be a Trump if you wanted a Trump. And depending on, like, who he's talking to, the head could spin. So now he's Trump, and then he's Biden, and then he's Obama. So he becomes all the presidents.
Right.
And depending on the situation, that's the president's face that comes up on his screen.
The president that's needed most.
Yes!
Yeah.
He simulates presidents, so yes. No one can be mad because it's every president. Oh, my
that's
God, we figured
idea.
It out. It's Lincoln. It's Washington.
It's Lincoln.
You never know who you're going to get in the State of the Union. Like,
it's Lincoln when we need more logs.
Yeah. Yeah, finally. It's Lincoln when we need... I don't know. When we need a Lincoln.
Yeah.
Kennedy, when we need a good speech about the space program.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's brilliant. We're going to do it.
It's great idea. No, and we're going to do it.
That's why we're doing this podcast, gang. We want to make an announcement. Ruby and I are in the process of creating a pretty amazing robot president, but we can't do it without your help.
I don't want to say too much about it, but it's going to be really big. It's going to be the next big thing.
Real big, gang. And there's a GoFundMe. If you go to GoFundMe, look up robot president.
Yeah.
If you donate over $500, $500,000, you will be, whatever you have done in the past will be completely forgiven.
Yeah.
So you donate $500,000 now. You could do whatever you want.
You do whatever you want, guilt-free.
Don't get arrested, though, because the robot president isn't there yet. But once he's there, you will be pardoned.
Yeah.
$500 is going to get you a figurine of the robot president that is going to be incredible.
Both great options.
I have to ask you, I'm curious. You, your mom was embedded with like some pretty hardcore hippies, right? Like, how did you end up hanging out with Wavy Gravy? How did you end up?
Yeah.
How did you end up like being around one of the most famous of the 60s outlaws?
My mom was not heavily embedded really at all. What happened was, is I grew up in a very small town where there was nothing to do really, except for, there were these weird people who did silks, aerial silks. Have you ever heard of that?
Yep.
And they like taught it to kids. And my mom was like, well, you can go do that.
Aerial
like
silks. Yeah. Wait, to be clear, that's the people who wind themselves up in those things. And like, that looks so fun.
So there's videos of me on the internet, if you look deep enough, of me doing that as
aerial
a child.
Silks? Are they dangerous?
Well, it's all like regulated and there's an adult watching ideally. I mean, kids like would break bones sometimes. It was fucked up. But no more than like sports or like soccer. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. Can you just refresh my memory on how like if I go into an aerial silk room, is it in a room?
What am I looking at? You're looking at like, it's literally like what you would imagine if you imagined like a rope of, but it's a silk, like one string of, but it's like thick silks hanging down from like a metal thing fixture in the ceiling.
Okay.
And then it's like people climbing it and wrapping themselves in it in particular ways that result like pretty shapes. Or if you're me and you want to do like the adrenaline thing, you like wrap yourself up and then you like let go of something and you do like this fall.
Whoa.
And spin downwards.
Wait, there was a singer. What's her name? She did that. Like, I remember like
Bjork, maybe.
It wasn't Bjork. It was, God, I can't remember. But yeah, it was like she did this whole aerial silk thing, went so high.
Oh, is that Sia? Is that her name?
It might have been Sia.
Yeah.
And she went really far up and it looked scary to watch and it seemed like a mistake almost. like it just seemed dangerous.
Yes.
So you did.
I did that as a child, as like a 10-year-old, because there was an after school program for the little kids and like that was one of the options. The other one was like macrame and I was like, I want to do the one where I'm falling.
So your mom. So your mom took you to this.
Yes.
And how did she find out about it?
I don't know. It was in Fort Bragg where I grew up. I think it was like at the rec center, at the Mendocino rec center. And I was really into silks and I found it really fun. And my mom was like, are there any extensions of this? Like, is there anything else, any other place she can go to do it? Cause she really likes it. And they suggested Camp Winter Rainbow, which is a circus and performing arts camp in Mendocino County in Laytonville, in those like woods. And, that
What's
camp,
it called?
It's called Camp Winter Rainbow.
Okay.
And that's Wavy Gravy's camp that he runs. So he made that camp, I think, like, it was kind of like, I don't really know the full backstory and I don't want to like butcher it, but it was basically like he created the camp because it started off as like a daycare when like all these hippies were like going on the road or going to a festival or like they needed childcare for their kids that would show up. So that's kind of like its like origin as I understand it. And now it's like a full-fledged camp and it has credentials and it's not that anymore.
Right. So he was the founder of Camp Winter Rainbow, Wavy Gravy.
Founder of Camp Winter Rainbow, yeah.
And wasn't Wavy Gravy the one who ran the pig farm?
Yes,
as it was
the
called?
Hog farm.
The
yeah.
hog farm.
That's where Camp Winter Rainbow is. It's
Camp
on the
Winter
hog farm.
Rainbow is on the hog farm. And is the hog farm still called the hog
it's
farm?
It's called the hog farm. There's like hogs. Yeah.
Wow.
It's because there are hogs like on the farm.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's good to know. I should have known that. I always just thought, why do they call it that? I just was like, oh, that's some kind of like deep hardcore hippie thing.
No,
it's
just there's hogs
farm,
on it.
Man.
Super straightforward.
So did your mom know about like Wavy Gravy or know about like the hog farm?
No, she had no context for what we were getting into.
Did you know?
No.
No idea.
I was like, I'm going to camp for the first time. Yeah.
You didn't know you're going to this legendary, like in the history of hippies and psychedelics, the hog farm.
I had no idea.
It gets brought up all the time.
I was nervous I was going to piss the bed. That was my biggest thing on my mind. I had no idea.
What does the hog farm look like? Because in my mind, just from the name, I'm so dumb. Like, I've just always pictured it as like just this series of like muddy fields with RVs in them because just mud everywhere.
No, it's like dirt, like not wet, just regular dirt, not mud at all. Really. I mean, it's like fields and what's the hog farm? It's like you drive through Laytonville, which is this fucked up little town, and then you like take a left and it's this like winding road and there are fields and there's probably mud, but there's also a river and there's trees and hills and it's beautiful. And then you go down the road and you go like, you dip into this valley and it looks like you're just going into the forest and then there's a whole camp.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so at what point did you like start realizing like you were in probably what I'm imagining, like a different kind of summer camp than what you thought you were going to be at?
Well, in my first year, I don't think I understood. I was like 9 years old. It was like pre-consciousness for me a little bit. But my second year, my mom got a job there so that I could go for free. And I was there all summer. And so I like slowly kind of understood the lore, you know what I mean? Because it's all like really crazy and like above, I don't know. So yeah, so I slowly understood. Wavy Gravy is at the camp when you go there. When I went there as a kid, and still now he's like in and out because he's older. But
what did is he? Would he dress up? Would he go in a clown?
Yeah, he has like his clown outfit on. He like does this whole thing where he like what is it? He like dresses up as a lot of different characters. That's his whole thing, right? It's like the MC, and he's like the chaotic MC, and has a lot of. But one of them is a clown. But he does morning reading to all the kids, and he like reads Naruto to everyone for 30 minutes after breakfast.
Yeah,
he
does. What?
He's like ingrained to the system of the camp.
So you're a kid and summer camp and wavy gravy is reading Neruda.
Yeah, but you're a kid, so you're like, this old guy, this old fucking weird guy is just reading me poetry that I don't understand. But it's cool and it's magic. You can feel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't even know when I, because I ended up going there for my whole childhood and I moved around a lot. It was the only place I returned to. So I can't pinpoint when I understood what it was, but eventually I was like, yeah, this is Wavy Gravy's camp and he did this in the 80s and blah, blah, blah.
Did you become a counselor?
Yeah, I became, it's actually kind of how I got my start in comedy because, I mean, it's a performing arts camp. The first thing they have you do as a kid is like on the first day of camp, you go up onto the stage and you have to introduce yourself to the whole camp.
Whoa.
And you like say your name and it's this powerful thing and it's hard for some kids. For me, I loved it.
Yeah.
I did improv there because they have an improv class. So I did that all growing up and eventually I became a counselor and I became a teen staff and then I became the improv teacher.
Wow.
So that's what I did. And then that was until I was 21 and then I started doing comedy too much to go back. But yeah.
Wow.
That was the whole thing.
That is
so
cool.
And I emceed with Wavy Gravy and it was totally crazy and he didn't really understand most of the things that I said, but it was really cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an amazing origin point. I was at some, I went to Camp Pinnacle.
Yeah.
Probably nowhere near as cool as, there was no Neruda that I'm aware of. Yeah. Like, it was a boys' camp, and it was more like Episcopalian, and so I think we were getting like Rudyard Kipling and stuff read to us. But still, yeah. I mean, that's not my origin point for being a comic necessarily, yeah. But for sure, I would tell ghost stories to the camp and stuff, and that's where I really realized how much I love
like
performing.
Camp is like a small enclosed community of people, so you really, I think, get to know who you are in that context, which is like a microcosm for what comedy can be, you know what I mean, for what fame can feel like, the sense of like everybody knows you, you know what I mean, like, oh, you can entertain in this setting, you know what I mean, you can stand out in this setting. It might be the first time as a kid you've been given a platform to do that. It can be really cool if you're not getting molested or whatever other stuff happens at summer camp sometimes.
I know, it's so terrifying. Yeah. You got to be brave to send your kid to summer camp.
You go work there.
Or you go,
like my mom did.
What was your mom's job there?
She was a maintenance woman.
Okay.
Actually, I totally glossed over it. Before I was a totally pissed off and uncharismatic teenager, and I worked in the kitchen so that I could be there all summer. And I did that for like 2 or 3 years before I finally was like, I want to be the improv teacher. And I climbed my way up to that. I worked in the kitchen and my mom was the maintenance woman.
Kitchen staff at a summer camp, they're always the outsiders. Like they're not.
You're on a different schedule. You're on a normal schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're outside the rules of the camp. Kind of. You're there, but you're not. Yeah. Generally, they smoke.
Yes,
they're
smoking. Yeah.
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 Do you remember any songs from the camp? Did it have its own songs?
I don't know the name. I just know how they go.
I'll do one. I'll start.
Okay.
Pinnacle boys are the boys you want to know. Pinnacle boys are the boys who really go. Raise your voice and shout it to the sky. We'll love Pinnacle till the day we die.
Oh, wow. That was intense.
Until now that I'm a dad, I was singing to myself. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you gotta bring up death in the camp song?
We had one like that where it used to be like a Jesus song, but we like changed the word. How does it go? Wait, let me think of it. It's like, well, the part that I'm remembering, it's a lullaby, and it culminates in this part where it's like, I love you, but Wavy loves you the best. I mean, just like they would put in Wavy instead of Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
That's kind of intense.
Cult.
And then the other one is.
That's a cult. So.
Totally. Yeah. And yes.
So there's a cult aspect to this camp.
Oh, it's very cultish. Not in like an insidious way, but it is like, because there's like sayings and like the phrasing of everything is very particular.
I hear you, but Wavy hears your thoughts.
Yeah.
I dream of you. But we're all in Wavy's dreams. Whoa. Okay.
So but it was like poking fun because it was a Jesus song. Okay. So there's the funniness of it, which makes it better.
Yeah.
There's also, I wonder if you know this one, which is like, May the long time light shine upon you. Do you know that one?
I think I heard it in a yoga class once.
Like, all lights around you and the pure light within you guide your way on. He would sing that, and that's about like grief, I think.
That's cool. That's a definitely like, you know, it was a spiritual camp, deep, yes, mystical, spiritual, yes, camp.
But then we also sang, because the camp gets together like before breakfast and also before dinner and like sing songs. And those, that's like the song leaders. And like we sang at one point, Sheena is a punk rocker. We would sing like Ramon songs. It's like how I discovered a lot of the music that I know. And like the Flaming Lips and shit.
That's cool.
Yeah, or like whatever the guys were who wanted to.
Your camp was cooler than mine. We didn't have any of that. We sang classic Christian songs. Noah, he came and built him an archy. No, it's like, yes, a song about God wiping out the planet, but it's like it's really like cheery somehow. Yeah. Like about an apocalyptic event written about in every like mythology. We did that. We did. Let me see if I think of another song from the camp. So many songs. Lots of just basic Christian camp songs, as I recall. Classics, you know, cover my face in the blood of Jesus. Cover my face, what, in blood. Take a bath in the blood of Jesus. I drink Jesus' blood.
Did you just come up with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. <that's> a-
I was like, wow, Duncan. I didn't know that.
Cover ourselves in the blood of Wavy. We drink, yeah, Wavy's blood. So did you, but it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't sound like a real cult. Did it feel a little like?
No, it's totally wholesome, I think, genuinely. Okay. I mean, it totally, I think, made me, because there's that thing in, I don't know if it's real psychology, but there's this school of thought that like children need one character or place in their, it's person in their life that is like consistent in, right, order to come out normal. Like they can have a crazy, fucked up, chaotic childhood, but if they just have one kind of pillar, then they can turn out okay. And I think that camp was, that's definitely cool, that. Because it was the only place I was returning to. You know what I mean?
Well, you, Wavy Gravy was pals with Ram Dass. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they knew each other. And I know that he's like really philanthropic. Like I know he like does a lot of great, he's did a lot of good stuff in the world.
Yes, and that, and those attitudes like trickled down, and the staff were like fans of his, but not like, you know what I mean? They were also artists and they were young people, and he and his like total, his magic like permeates kind of throughout the culture of the camp.
You, yeah, still talk to your friends from there?
From camp? Yeah, I do. I have phone calls with them. They and must, I get updates on the camp drama and all that.
They must be pretty excited that you are like doing stand up.
Yeah. One of them spread this, not a rumor, it was like a positive rumor, but they like one session told everybody that I was famous now and that I was getting famous. And these two kids that I taught improv to, and I was also their counselor, they emailed me and they were like, hey, we heard you're famous. When do you get on TV? Like all this stuff. I was like, I'm sorry.
That's so cool. I mean, so wait, what happened? Your Instagram, or you had like some social media blow up? Like,
yes, I worked for a comedian for a long time who I was one of the initial people that got on, because like Facebook was offering comedians, but, or not just comedians, but like anyone who was making reels, primarily comedians, a lot of money to, yeah, do that. So he was doing that and then totally blew up. But right before that, he hired me to be his personal assistant. So, okay, I saw him do that. And I saw like his whole system and the mailing list thing and all of that. And, that was right after. So prior to that, I went back to community college because during COVID, I had only been doing stand-up for like 2 years, right, and I was an amateur. And so I had nothing to do. So I was like, okay, I'll go to college. Because initially I dropped out of college, or I decided not to go, yeah, so that I could do stand-up, cool, right out of high school. And I totally lost my train of thought.
That's pretty young to start doing stand-up.
I was 18. I think it changed the way that I think about stand-up. Like it's very easy when you're 18, when you discover anything and you're 18, it can really easily become the most important thing, yeah, in your world. And sure, stand-up is so intense that it was consuming for me. And I think my brain wasn't fully developed yet. So it is very much a part of me, I think, because of that. You know,
you're in good company. I think Bill Hicks started real young. Yes. Dave Chappelle started, yes, real young.
Yeah.
You have like a, and that gives you like a real leg up because it takes a long time to get good at it. And you're already good at it. And now it all makes sense because you've been doing it since high school.
Since I was 18,
Since you were 18. And before that, you were sort of doing it at the summer camp. You had some training or something. And now, wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I was asking Ram Dass the cheesiest question once, how to be a good dad. And he said, soul, not role. He said, and this is when he had his stroke, so he had to abbreviate everything. He had to talk really slow, you know, like, he was soul, not role. He said, dad, role, son, role. So he's pointing out, like, don't get caught up too much. I mean, be a dad, but don't lose sight of your kid's soul. It is your son, but it's like you have to, like some parents, they only see that.
Right.
They don't see the light. They don't see what
what they're going towards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so then you get them, your kid trapped, and you can be very manipulative about that and pretend you're not doing it and you are.
Yeah.
So yeah, with the oldest, I mean, of course, because I used to say that when I was a kid to my dad, but he's like, I want to be a stand-up comedian. And I think I would love it when he was in high school, he actually started doing it. Aaron, I don't think so much, and I understand why, because it's like, I mean, it's not exactly the most stable lifestyle on planet Earth.
Not. I think it's best for people who I feel kind of unemployable in every other realm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just kind of sort of useless when I have to sit down to do any, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's why stand-up makes sense and is like a point of joy for me, where I think for other people, it could be a real step down
nightmare.
From what they could potentially be. You know
a
what
nightmare.
I mean?
Yeah. A hell life.
A hell life.
And some people get stuck in it and they never wanted to do it. And then they're like living this life they didn't really want. And then they're miserable and they get really depressed.
Right.
You do have to really have a very certain way of dealing with chaos you know, because you don't.
It's conducive.
It's so scary. It's such a weird, wonderful job. So that is your mom excited about all this?
She is excited. I think she likes that I'm still in college and that I'm continuing to do that, and that's important to her, but she is totally supportive that I'm doing stand-up
comedy. What are you studying in college?
Okay, so the college that I transferred to from community college is it's like a liberal arts college. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure type of thing, where the senior thesis project that your time there culminates in is you basically like draft an argument that project is your major. So whatever the project is that you choose, you're like, okay, this is what I majored in. And then you argue for that like in front of a committee of adults and your peers. And then that's your major that you graduated college in. And they have different stuff set up for that. And when I initially went, it was again off the back of COVID, and I wasn't going there, at least not consciously, to like be a stand-up comedian and do a comedy project. And I thought that I was going to do like history major stuff.
Okay, yep.
And then like the real me, I think, kind of slowly permeated. And the senior thesis project that I'm doing is a 30-minute stand-up special.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
What it's gonna be.
That's super cool. You're ready for that. That's awesome. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that'll be 9 months from now when I graduate.
When you're on the road with me, do you get credits for it? Is it like, should be considered credits, right?
You're my special project, actually.
Yeah. All right. That's good. Finally a professor. So that's a funny thing comedians do when we do that. Like I did psychology. I thought I was going to be a psychologist.
Yeah.
But a lot of us do history.
Yeah.
The ones who go to college.
Philosophy.
Lit.
Yes.
Some acting, I guess, but
I think I just wanted to be near New York, but I didn't feel like I could be like, yeah, I'm going to go to New York and try stand-up comedy because that's so dangerous and vulnerable. You know what I mean? So I did like this workaround, and then, and I from college, I couldn't do stand-up. Because I was in Amherst, Massachusetts. I mean, I was going out to open for my boss at the time, but I couldn't really practice or fail, in that environment. So I ended up posting clips as an independent study that I designed. That was like, yeah, I'm going to post clips. I'm going to do this and do this experiment and design this whole independent study based off of what I had been doing for my boss successfully. And then, yeah, it blew up. And that's how Lance saw me and a bunch of other stuff got started.
And that's how I met you. Yes. Because Lance brought you to a show in Portland. Yes. And I'm like, God, she's so funny.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And
wow.
Lance didn't know. He kept on saying stuff like, yeah, Ruby, like when you've done other festivals. And I was like, yeah, Lance, I've done lots of other festivals. He didn't know. It was like my first time doing something like that.
Well, Lance is a kid. Like, there's people out there, these like, we're talking about Lance Bangs. For those of you who are familiar with Jackass or all the other awesome things he's done, a lot of music videos, a lot of comedy social, but he's like he not only makes cool stuff, but he like makes connections and plugs people in. There's some people
very
who are
much
so
a champion
good at that.
Yeah. Young people. Yeah.
Yeah. He's awesome. So I love that story. It's so chaotic.
Like, very chaotic.
I love it. Yeah. my same with me. I mean, it's in a lot of comics, like when you sort of like look, when you try to connect the dots at how you ended up on stage and you look, it's very weird.
And Lance, the reason that because I did come up on his social media and that's why he was inspired to bring me out to Portland. But I guess he had, and I didn't know this, he saw me when I was doing like some fucked up open mic in Sacramento. Like he didn't say hi, but I guess he had made, like, thank God I went to that fucked up open mic in Sacramento. But I think it goes to like, it's like small things, forking paths. Like who the fuck knows like what is going to be. You know what I mean?
I know.
Because a lot of it is purposeful and you have to have the, you know what I mean? But yeah, a lot of it is just like weird, randomized.
Just synchronicity.
Yes.
When I look at it, like the best things in my life never came from a plan.
Because you did it on purpose. Yeah, me neither.
Never. There was never like, I'm going to go from point A to point B to point C. Yes. It's always just something emerges from the universe that leads, sort of, there's these little stepping stones that lead you.
Yeah.
But really, if you think too much about like some linear path, you miss every.
For me, I'll get anxious because I don't want to blame myself when things go wrong. So it's much easier to like step slowly towards the thing that I think that I want than to like step right towards it and run at it. You know what I mean? And I do find that, if you keep things like open and breathing, then there's room for things you didn't expect and things that you didn't know that you want and that you probably want more than the things that you think that you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because you can't, if you get too caught up in what you want and then you miss, it's just so many versions of this. Like, if you get too caught up in what, I don't know, like spiritual teachers, like going to these Ram Dass retreats, you know, in my mind, they look, they're supposed to look some way.
Yeah.
But you'll be around like people who are like lamas, like people who have like been in monasteries and sat with the Dalai Lama and they're wearing a Hawaiian shirt. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you forget.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it's so many other versions of that where you, because you're looking for some specific something that matches what's in your head in the external world, the thing you're looking for could be right next to you.
Yeah.
You could be like sitting next to them at the office or on the airplane and you'll never see them.
Totally.
Because they don't match what's in your head, what they should look like.
And you're like the least qualified person to know what you want because you have all of these very superficial, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I want to stay in my hotel room all day and you know what
there
I
you
mean?
Go.
And good thing I didn't, right? Like, and it's, I think it's just like stuff like that throughout your whole life. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Like not, but I don't think, I think it's anytime I let myself go into that place completely, it feels a little insecure. There's some insecurity in not knowing, you know, you're just.
Yes.
Like, have you ever, I've been doing this lately, not doing the Google search or not answering a question that I have. So like a question will pop up in my head, like, what is that? Or what's the name of that? Or
how does that work? Look into it.
But instead just feel the feeling of wanting an answer. You ever do that? Like the feeling of wanting an answer? Yeah. It's a weird feeling.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah. It's an itchy feeling.
Yeah.
And you want to stop it.
Yes.
Like it's an itch that gets scratched by getting the data set that matches the question.
Learning the boring truth.
Yeah, yeah, and learning the boring truth. And then it's like, okay, I'm better now. It's almost like a thirst or something.
Yeah.
And if you just let yourself not, don't stop answering all the questions.
Give
for
your
a
mind
second.
Blue balls.
Yeah, yeah, give your mind blue balls. Exactly. That's Neruda, right? Isn't that one of his famous poems?
Yeah. Yeah, that Wavy would read to
us. Give your mind blue balls.
Give your mind blue balls. Neruda.
Welcome to camp. What's it called? Find a rainbow?
Win a rainbow. You win it, yeah.
Welcome to camp, win a rainbow. I'm the Wavy Gravy, the lord of this camp. I'm going to read some Neruda for some of my favorite gifts.
It's No Nuts September, so you know I got to read Pablo Neruda.
No Nuts September, read Neruda. And of course, we're going to read Give Your Mind Blue Balls to start off. But yeah, but that state of not knowing, it's a very fertile place. You know, it's like a lot of stuff springs out of that place.
Yeah.
So if you answer your question too soon and you don't get to enjoy the I don't know thing.
And the other questions that come along with it before you know. It's the same with boredom, which we totally don't allow ourselves to do anymore and have. It's like that is the beginning of a great day. If you can just sit with it, you know what I mean?
Cool, yeah.
But you don't, because your dopamine toy is right in front of you, whatever it is. You
shut
know
it
I
off.
Mean?
I mean, it's like we're at war with that feeling everywhere. Like no one wants to be in a place. You're considered an idiot if you don't know an answer. You're supposed to have the answers. Yes. You're supposed to know. And if you don't know, you're supposed to get the answer as quickly as you fucking can.
Yeah.
You're not just supposed to sit there in the unknowing like some dope. You're supposed to just constantly
find
be
it, but Google it.
Yeah. And and then what? Like one of my friends was telling me that he would go on the road. He's a musician. He would go on the road and somebody would ask a question or wonder something, and then somebody would look it up on their phone. Mm-hmm. And so he imposed a rule. No one can answer questions anymore on Google.
You gotta just sit and fucking wonder.
No, I think they had like a fruit or something, and they whoever was going to be the person who would normally look in their phone would have to pick up the fruit and make up an answer. Like, you know, like just say, all right, here's the answer from my own head.
Yeah.
And no one could even look. And because what's the difference? You know, what's the difference really?
Yeah, really.
I mean, if you're not doing surgery or something.
Right. I mean, maybe like later on you'll go on a podcast and say that Vladimir Putin listened to Coldplay, which he didn't, because you made up that answer at some point. You know what I mean? And you've spread in misinformation.
I almost looked. I mean, that's the thing. You want to look.
Oh, I really wanted to.
Did he really? I want to verify.
Yeah.
I want to fact check you.
Yeah.
Is it the truth? And then the moment you do that, you go into your device.
Yeah.
And you stop
and we couldn't
the conversation.
Have talked about Vladimir Putin listening to Coldplay for 10 minutes if we found out that wasn't, we probably just would have moved on.
Moved on, and we wouldn't have gotten to our idea.
Robot King.
And
it's not an idea, it's a plan.
A plan, thank you. Sorry, I keep saying that.
Yeah.
And I do want to remind everybody, there is a Kickstarter for this.
Yeah.
You could go, just Robot King on Kickstarter, $500,000. You could do whatever you want.
500, figurine. 50 will blow on your face softly for 30 to an
50?
Hour.
50? What?
Yeah. Soft blow on your face.
I'm not doing that.
We said we would do
that. I'm not blowing on anybody's face. I don't want to blow on anyone's face. No, trust me. No one is
going
to pay for that, for me to blow on their face. That's
People
not.
People will pay for it.
I don't think
you
so.
You were super excited about it when we first talked about it.
Yeah, but then
you're
I
like,
thought.
Yeah, I'm going to blow on their face.
I was joking.
No, you weren't.
I was joking. I'm not going to blow
what
on anybody's face.
You sound like when you're joking.
If we're going to do a face blowing tier, let's make it a little more expensive. I don't have time to like where do I, so I have to fly to all over the country to blow
like,
on
we'll
people.
We'll figure it out as it comes. We don't have to make a plan.
Well, friends, the tier, don't worry about the blow on your face tier. We'll work it.
We'll work it later.
500, was it 500 gets the figurine?
Yeah.
500,000, it's the purge for you, basically. Like you can fucking go
you
wild.
You can do anything you want.
Set shit on fire.
People on fire.
Except what? Look, I don't want you to, but once Robot King.
I want you to.
Ruby wants you to set people on fire.
Yeah.
I don't, but look, once Robot King is installed, literally installed, I guess we'll have to install the King and download it or whatever.
Oh, yeah, like on the PC or something.
But here's what's great about Robot King. It will be on everyone's phone. Like, can you imagine right now, you want to talk to the president?
No.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Want to talk to Robot King?
He made that very clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robot King in your phone anytime you want. You want to talk politics. You want to yell at it.
You're angry at it. You can just talk. You can yell at the president itself instead of your family who you love.
Which I wouldn't recommend because we aren't programming Robot King to be compassionate necessarily.
No,
I wouldn't advise critiquing the Robot King. Our prototype model is actually really vengeful.
It's super like straight away to violence is kind of its like number one go-to.
Yeah. Number one go-to. Like, yeah, I was asking it because I just was testing it and I guess I defended it. I didn't even know it's passive aggressive, but I asked it just to test the AI, you know, what's a great coffee, like what's good to put in coffee. Mm-hmm. And it gave me like these weird components to put in the coffee. And then I looked it up and it was poison.
Yeah.
It was trying to poison me. So
it's been doing that.
But if you want to yell at the President King, you can.
You can at your own risk.
Robot President King.
Robot President King. Boy King.
Ruby, thank you for doing the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the road with me. You are
absolutely
so funny.
Thank you.
This has been so fun. Can you tell people where to find you?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on my Instagram at Ruby K. Setnick.
Great. Yeah. All the links you need to find Ruby will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Come see us. We're going to be at Cobb's weekend after next.
Oh, yeah.
So
San Francisco.
Come see Ruby. She's so funny. Come see me. I love you guys. Thank you for doing the show, Ruby. That was Ruby Setnick. Everybody, all the links you need to find Ruby will be at DuncanTrussell.com. A tremendous thank you to our sponsors. Come see us in San Francisco, please. I love you, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.